Hello, hello, and welcome to the CASA Delaware Live podcast. I'm Lauren Bruckner, your CASA training director and the host for today's podcast. I am actually also the guest. Today, we are releasing podcast number 103, which is being released on Monday, April 8th of 2024. We had a cancellation in our guest today because of some illness. So I'm last minute kind of filling in with a topic that many folks have asked about. So while we do already have a variety of podcasts focused on independent living services, I feel like there's always room for more. So today I'm going to be chatting with you about independent living services, and we'll dive in just a moment. All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining me today. I know I typically have a guest, but today we're just rolling with it as life happens. So one topic that several CASA volunteers ask about on a regular basis are independent living services. What are independent living services? So first of all, they are services that are offered to youth who are in state custody starting at the age of 16. I'll come back to that in a second as to why, but these independent living services are provided by contract agencies that focus on preparing the youth to become an adult or to live independently. So we talked about them being 16 and older. So what happens once a youth is in state custody at the age of 16, the DFS, Division of Family Services Social Worker, will make a referral for independent living services. Why do we start at 16? So if we think about 16, that is when youth generally start to think about higher education, employment, their living situation upon graduation from high school, and financial support. So the reason we start at 16 is so that that independent living worker can create and support a relationship with that youth to help understand what they want out of their lives and for the independent living worker to help them achieve those goals. All right, so we work with a variety of independent living providers, such as People's Place, Progressive Life, West End Neighborhood House, to name a few. So what happens is these organizations contract through the state of Delaware to offer these independent living services. I want to be clear because a couple CASAs misunderstand who is who. The independent living worker is a separate or additional person from DFS. So the DFS worker is not the independent living worker. The independent living worker works for those contract agencies, not directly through DFS. So you will roughly have for two-ish years both an independent living worker and a Division of Family Services worker if your youth stays in care until the age of 18 or older. So independent living services are really focused on getting started right around that 16-year-old mark. And the plan for them is to focus on what do they want their future to look like and what does that future entail. As we know, Delaware allows youth, you know, to work, have gainful legal employment starting earlier than age 16. But around 16, they are able to have a little bit looser of work requirements, meaning they can work a little bit later, they can work a couple more hours. So the independent living worker might be able to help them secure employment. This would be in the form of securing specific job training, perhaps, writing a resume, and applying for a variety of different jobs. So that independent living worker is solely focused on seeking out assistance for this teenager. So I'm kind of focusing on the 16 to 18 year old mark for right this moment. The other thing that happens is that most youth apply for college the fall of their senior year. A lot of those youth are not yet 18 years old, so they're still 17. So that independent living worker will help them apply to college. College applications are now one application that they submit to however many colleges that they would like to apply to. That independent living worker will also help them complete the FAFSA form. If everybody remembers doing that for themselves and or their own children, it can be rather complicated. So the Division of Family Services, you know, relies on the independent living worker to be experts in this field and to help the youth navigate college applications, among other things. So we'll go back to employment for just a moment. The independent living worker can also help transport the youth to apply for different jobs, job interviews. Though most applications take place online now, gone are the days where we walk into a restaurant and fill out that paper application. Most employers have online application options, so the independent living worker can help them focus on those job applications. So they can also help them with the college, as we discussed. Then we have, as of 2022, the state legislature has passed the tuition waiver bill, which is an incredible opportunity for youth who have experienced foster care should they choose to take advantage of it. So what is the tuition waiver program? The tuition waiver program allows any youth who has been in Delaware state custody for at least 12 months between the ages of 14 and 18 to be able to waive tuition, room and board, and books for up to 5 years to the University of Delaware, Del State University, and Delaware Technical Community College. This is incredible. Of course, the youth has to academically qualify for University of Delaware and Del State, but that independent living worker can help them navigate that tuition waiver bill and that option. So if your youth is contemplating college and wants to stay in state, that is an incredible opportunity for them to take advantage of nearly free college education. Independent living worker can also help with additional, you know, college applications and finances, as well as trade schools. You know, college is not for every single youth, and maybe your youth is interested in another option. So the independent living worker for that youth can absolutely help navigate the next steps. Also under independent living worker is the smooth transition from prevention of behavioral health, which is child mental health, into adult mental health. So if your youth is taking advantage of some mental health services, the independent living worker will ensure that those services do not disrupt once that youth turns 18 and transitions into adult services. Also, housing. Housing can be an option that independent living workers will assist with. Most youth are able to stay in their foster placements through the graduation of high school. I'll come back to that in just a moment. But we don't want to have homeless kids trying to graduate high school. So we want to work very, very hard to make sure that our youth has a secure and appropriate living option. So the independent living worker will work with the foster parents or wherever your youth is currently residing to ensure that they are able to stay through high school graduation. But most high schoolers turn 18 during their senior year. Again, we do not want homeless youth trying to graduate high school. So the Division of Family Services has what is called a board extension. It's exactly as it sounds. It is the extension of room and board. So as long as the youth is living in an appropriate, stable placement, most likely with the foster parent who may have been caring for them previous to their 18th birthday, the Division of Family Services will continue to pay for that youth's room and board. The idea is, again, to have them be able to graduate without trying to also find housing at the same time. However, once they turn 18 and or they graduate, maybe that's not where they want to stay. Maybe they want to stay somewhere else, have their own apartment, seek campus housing, get a housing option with a roommate or without. So the independent living worker can also help them secure housing, whether it's getting them on the list for the Delaware Housing Authority or finding some other housing option. So the independent living worker will help them do that as well. What is your role as a CASA during that kind of 16 to 18 year old mark? So really your role is to be a key communicator between Division of Family Services and the independent living worker. Though you three people sort of form a separate triad where you are really focused on the services offered to this youth. So far we've talked about four of the five services that are offered. So one is employment, one is education, one is housing, and one is medical coverage. The fifth item that independent living workers cover is financial. So youth are eligible for what are called assist funds, and they're eligible to receive up to $1,000 a month if they are partaking in active engaging opportunities, which means going to school, working, or volunteering somewhere. So they need to be actively engaged in their community in order to receive those assist funds. Back in 2013, there was a group of foster youth and professionals that came together to create the Ready by 21 state legislation. And that is the legislation that provided the funding for assist funds and for independent living workers and support services for youth aging out of care. So what happens is those assist funds come from that pot of money, and the folks that put that legislation together agreed that it is supposed to be temporary, that those funding is supposed to help them get started, but not be the sole source of income. So as youth go out into the world and engage in their own employment and their own financial well-being, is the more money that they earn independently, the less money they will receive from assist funds. And the idea is that by the time they are finished with independent living, they have a solid understanding of financial management and hopefully have been able to save up a little nest egg so that they have some savings to their name. We talked about financial management. They also go through a money management module. Say that three times fast. That module teaches them how to budget, how to create a balanced budget, you know, an idea of how much money do they have coming in versus how much money do they have going out. Basic rules of finance is that we need more coming in than going out. So that money management will help them understand that, as well as create online accounts and accounts in general, and allow them to kind of be ready with those financial resources as well. So we talked about a board extension. The other term that causes some confusion with CASA volunteers is extended jurisdiction. Now, in hindsight, we probably should have called one of these something different, board extension versus extended jurisdiction. Please know that they are not really related. So remember, board extension just means the extension of room and board, Division of Family Services continuing to pay for housing for youth until they graduate high school. Board extension. Several CASAs have experienced a board extension. And what this does is it extends the connection between the CASA and the family court from the age of 18 to 21. So that means that once the youth turns 18, Division of Family Services is no longer involved with this youth. Why? Because they are now an adult. So they are not under the custody of Division of Family Services. So once they turn 18, Division of Family Services has concluded their legal connection to this youth. But the independent living worker can and will provide services if the youth wants them up until the age of 23. So independent living services go from the age of ages of 16 to 23. CASAs can stay involved in that extended jurisdiction from 18 to 21. So let's talk about extended jurisdiction for a second. First of all, it should only be filed for if your youth actually wants it. So sometimes we have some really, really supportive CASAs that want their youth to engage in extended jurisdiction. But in all honesty, if the youth is not going to engage and not come to court hearings, there's not really a point in it. The purpose of extended jurisdiction is sort of to serve as a watchdog so that the CASA can remain legally connected to this case and ensure that independent living services are being offered. So the CASA is really checking up and kind of connected with that independent living worker, sometimes being the go-between between the child and the independent living worker. If for some reason they're not communicating, or communication is kind of getting lost in translation. So the CASA can be very involved when ensuring that the route of communication is open. The independent living worker should be in contact with the youth on a regular basis. The CASA is still asked to visit their youth at least once a month in person. So just because they enter adulthood and become an adult doesn't mean that we stop seeing them. So your role just looks a little bit different, because now you are just really advocating for those independent living services to continue or change if they need to change at all. And just to make sure that those services are being offered and that there's no questions or concerns. But your youth is now an adult between 18 and 21, obviously. So you would have court hearings at least twice a year. So every 6 months, they'll have a court hearing with the same family court judge that oversaw the dependency and neglect case. But the youth has to come to court. The court hearing is about them. A lot of the judges, have developed a good relationship with that youth over the years. And a lot of the judges enjoy seeing the children, and the children, now adults, like seeing the judge. But we don't want to force them by any means. They're an adult. They can certainly choose not to participate in these services. But the extended jurisdiction just allows them a little bit of comfort and backup in case for some reason something's not happening with the independent living, or there's a glitch in the system or something like that. I want to refer back to last week's podcast, which was about the STEPS meeting. That process takes place at 17 years old in about 2 months or so. And the independent living worker and the DFS worker are heavily involved during that time period. The youth is still under the custody of DFS because they are under 18. And the CASA can absolutely participate in that STEPS meeting. So I encourage you to go back and listen to the last podcast about that topic. I won't rehash it here, but it's a way to sit down at the table and have an active, engaging meeting to lay down, write down on paper, what the youth's plan is for housing, employment, education, mental health, and financial support. So what are the actual actions that are going to take place with regards to those five things? A lot of our youth rely on the independent living worker, as well as the CASA, as well as the DFS worker prior to 18, so that they can navigate their adulthood. Adulthood and transitioning into adulthood is not easy for anyone, and it can be very overwhelming, especially if you don't have a strong support system, as some of our youth don't. Though luckily a lot of our youth, have created their own support system, whether it's in the foster home or with the CASA or with a group of friends. So you as a CASA can be really, really helpful in supporting the youth. Talk to them about their future. What do they want? Then we can figure, once we identify what they want, a CASA can be better equipped for advocating for those desires. And if there's particular resources that might be helpful, such as the tuition waiver and entering into college or getting into a trade school or securing a particular job, that would be great. So the CASA can absolutely play a pivotal role when connecting the youth to services, or at least the people who can adequately provide those services. All right, so we've talked quite a bit about 16 plus year olds. So again, that independent living only kicks in once a youth turns 16. And a lot of times you will find that your older teenagers who are taking advantage of this option are they have a permanency plan of APLA, which is another permanent planned living arrangement, which is long-term foster care. So there's a federal law that says kids over the age of 16 and over may have APLA as a permanency plan. So any youth who is under 16 should not have APLA as a permanency plan. But that's not to say that between that 16 and 18 year mark that they cannot take advantage of independent living services. They absolutely can. And if their case ends in guardianship, permanent guardianship, or adoption, or reunification, so our four options that are not APLA, they are still eligible to receive independent living services. I believe the time frame is 60 days, I believe. I'm not entirely sure how long, but I know that they, there's a time frame that they can receive those services up until. And we would think, why would we stop independent living services if they are not in the custody of DFS anymore? And the idea is that if they have exited care to reunification or guardianship, permanent guardianship or adoption, that hopefully their permanency person, biological parents, adoptive parents, whoever has taken guardianship of them, will be able to help them navigate the educational system, employment system, mental health system, housing options, and financial support. So independent living services are offered once a youth exits care prior to 18, but it's only for a certain period of time. So these independent living services can be very, very beneficial to a youth, but they are 100% voluntary. So your youth does not have to engage with an independent living worker or engage in independent living services at all. It is totally voluntary and up to them. However, they can choose to not engage, turn 18, age out of the system, and then as long as they contact an independent living worker prior to 6 months, before independent living services are over, then they can re-engage in that those independent living services. So if they change their mind, they exited 18 and decided about 19 that they need some help, they are certainly welcome to contact independent living worker to engage back in those services. So again, we want successful youth, and hopefully this is a way to be able to provide youth with some supports and knowledge and information and things that they need to enter into adulthood. So let's go back to extended jurisdiction for a moment. So let's assume you have an extended jurisdiction case, which means your youth is over 18, but not yet 21. So you will have the expectation of attending the court hearings, which are usually twice a year, every 6 months. Hopefully you know when that next court hearing will be. You are still not permitted to provide transportation or purchase gifts, those two big things that CASAS cannot do for any youth that they are appointed to. So as long as you are appointed to your youth, those two things are not permitted. Once your appointment as a CASA ends, meaning they turn 21 or we terminate extended jurisdiction, what you choose to do with the youth is on your own, your type of communication and the relationship that the two of you have is on your own. But so I want to really focus on what happens between 18 and 21, kind of as we are in that advocating for an adult, mostly. So as a CASA for this 18 to 21-year-old, we want to make sure that you keep in touch with that youth. Again, you're still required to see them at least monthly and attend the court hearings that they have coming up. You can play a pivotal role in making sure that the youth knows when the court hearings are and make sure that they understand what happened in the last court hearing. What is this court hearing about? What's the purpose? What are we looking for? And if there's any follow-up action item that needs to take place, that's something that you can really be pivotal in helping to accomplish. You can also support the youth in just answering their phone call. Same thing you would as they are if they are under 18. And if they have an expressed desire, there's something they're interested in, there's something they want to know about, you as the CASA can work with your triad to get them the information that they might be seeking. You can also work with the independent living worker as well. Maybe that independent living worker has knowledge about maybe military application. Maybe that's what your youth is interested in. So let's see if we can get them connected with some information and some services. I also want to make sure that CASA volunteers continue to utilize their triad. So your CASA coordinator and your child attorney is still just as active in an extended jurisdiction case as they were prior to extended jurisdiction. Just the issues just might not be as frequent, you know, or there might not be quite as much going on as there might have been prior to the youth turning 18. So please utilize your CASA coordinator. Ask them questions. If something doesn't make sense, please ask. We'd much rather explain a situation or find an answer if we don't know to identify, you know, how can we all best help this youth. So you would continue to work in your CASA triad. And the child attorney will continue to advocate legally and communicate with the other attorneys in the involved in the case, which might not be any parent attorneys. It might just be the Division of Family Services attorney until that youth turns 18. Then it might happen where the child attorney is the only attorney in the courtroom if they're over 18, starting in that extended jurisdiction, and they can kind of help run the court hearing. Again, that court hearing looks a little bit different because we're not reunifying and we're really just catching up on the young adult's life and ensuring that independent living services are being appropriately offered and see if that youth has any questions. All right, all. So I hope this was very helpful and I absolutely thank you for listening and kind of rolling with us as I come up with a last minute topic to chat about. And we will be able to reschedule the guests that were scheduled for today. So thanks so much.
And as the years go by, a friendship will never die.